Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we're bringing you a special edition of the show from Sacramento, California, where AgriPulse hosted the annual Food and Ag Issues Summit West. Just steps from the state capitol, lawmakers, agriculture leaders, and administration officials gathered to discuss some of the biggest challenges facing California producers, from regulations, water and labor shortages, to rising land and equipment costs, the rise of data centers, and more. We also celebrated the winners of the Great Tomato Challenge, a friendly competition that invited California legislators and their staff to grow tomato plants this spring with donations made to food banks chosen by the winners. California agriculture operates at a scale and under conditions unlike anywhere else in the country. Yet what happens here matters far beyond state lines. I sat down with California Department of Food and Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross to discuss the factors shaping California agriculture and why the rest of the country should be paying attention.
Well, to quote my brother, the Nebraska farmer in Western Nebraska, whatever you're doing out there, try to keep it there as long as possible because we are a highly urbanized state. We're also the most urbanized state. And a lot of our policy reflects folks who may not have ever grown up around any type of farming. And so we have a very strong environmental ethic here in California. It's a big, beautiful state with so many different landscapes and bioregions. And so we have a lot of environmental rules. We have a lot of worker standards that oftentimes are the first of their kind across the country. And those are all things that are done, you know, through the political process. And then our farmers, it really stimulates even more innovation, but it's getting harder and harder to stay efficient, stay in compliance, and to stay really competitive. But those are the kinds of issues that people probably know us for. In addition to, there's always that cottage industry called the ballot initiative process. And that has also delivered some things for us that others may not yet be dealing with.
Yeah, and we'll dive into quite a few of those issues. Sure. But, you know, some of those challenges of the state's farmers you mentioned are becoming the challenges of farmers all across the country.
Yes.
You know, how do you view the state of California agriculture and your state's farm economy right now? And, you know, what sentiment are you hearing from your producers?
Yeah, so in my over 30 years of working here in California, it reminds me of my very first position when I was still in Nebraska. I worked for United States Senator running district offices while I was putting myself through night school at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. And at that time, it was a horrible agricultural economy. We had so many farmer suicides. A good friend of mine was the governor of the state of Nebraska, and we were closing state banks. I never thought I would see so many of our top commodities in a state with 400 different kinds of crops all suffering from so many disruptions in their export markets or tariffs or cost of production, changing consumer tastes. So the issue of bankruptcies, ongoing march of consolidation, just the stress on so many of our farm families. And of course, here in California, given we're so dependent upon irrigated agriculture, the water issues and the changing climate for a hotter, drier future really are driving even additional stress levels that people are trying to plan for. But sometimes you have to make decisions about the transition to the next generation now. And it's done with a great deal of uncertainty, to be honest.
Yeah. And let's pivot now to water. You began including that in your opening question, but California's invested very heavily in groundwater sustainability and water conservation. Mm-hmm. You know, what lessons from that experience and seeing that in your state work, you know, worked well or need improvement? And, you know, what can other states that are facing growing water constraints, you know, take note of from what you've done in California?
Well, I feel very fortunate that we've been through a time where we've had some surplus dollars to really invest in partnering with farmers and ranchers to improve irrigation technology and those irrigation practices, which have multiple benefits. And so it's always like, how do we look at this in a more integrated resource management approach where we can get multiple benefits? Save water, reduce energy use by saving water with improving pumping efficiency, improve nitrogen management, which also the water being precise in the water amount that we use also has great benefits for below ground soil biodiversity, which is crucial for ongoing production. So we've been able to make huge investments, over $120 million of on-farm water use conservation, and making sure that we're also investing in technical assistance to make sure that every farmer, regardless of whether English is their first language or not, every scale, everywhere in the state. We've invested heavily in resource conservation districts and UC Cooperative Extension to make sure the knowledge is out there and that even when dollars decline, we still have the knowledge and the network to help others adopt these practices or make these investments. So that's been one very important lesson for us. We also started out with, we need to save water, let's make it voluntary practices with some incentive dollars. Incentives make a huge difference, especially for newer practices, so that you're de-risking that upfront capital investment and letting farmers prove it to themselves and their neighbors. This really works. The return on investment for this definitely justifies expanding the use of this technology.
We'll be back with more from Sacramento right after this.
As a cooperative, our customers are our owners. They share our profits and help guide our business. We're not just another lender. We're Farm Credit, and we're here for you.
Think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This is my sustainability story.
The Make America Healthy Again movement has generated significant discussion around food production and agricultural practices. Some of the priorities date back far before the Trump administration, and California has been ahead of federal policy on things like food dye bans. I asked California Department of Food and Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross how agriculture should engage with the broader Mohawk conversation moving forward.
Since I come from a department called Department of Food and Agriculture, I think it's very natural that this is a food and ag and that we're helping, especially as we urbanize more and more, we're helping consumers understand that farming and ag are what produce this food that you want. There is a lot more interest, and that's just been growing, and social media fuels that more interest. And it's not just what you're growing, but how are you growing it that people are vitally interested in. We also know younger consumers and moms deeply care and should care about what they're feeding their children and wanting to make sure that it's as healthy as it can possibly be. I've seen that pressure. I've worked on the pesticide issues in this state for over 30 years. This is not a new trend. It has different voices involved in it. I think we want to be very careful about how it comes into the policy arena, that we're not pitting one against the other. Like, what we grow is what is healthy for you, and we grow with the greatest care. But we've politicized, almost weaponized food or different practices that I think is to the detriment when we think about the wide variety of socioeconomic circumstances of people. We should all care about our food being as accessible and as affordable as possible to all people. It shouldn't be a luxury to have food grown one way and leaving out others. These are, you know, they get very complicated. But having spent 2 years in the state defining regenerative agriculture and knowing about the strong feelings about whether is that competing with organic, is it not as good or better than organic, these things I don't think serve us well. I think they add confusion and a lot of background noise to people really focusing on health and nutrition and good eating for better quality of life.
Yeah, when we talk about the Farm Bill now, mm-hmm. passed through the House, but you know, including a fix to California's right. Proposition 12 was included in that, uh-huh. and has been a big point of contention within Congress, especially as we now move to the Senate. Kind of the future of it there being uncertain, but mm-hmm. being in California where that all started, you know, it's affected producers far beyond California's borders. But what would you say to livestock producers in other states who view California standards as a way that influence how they do business? And what have you and the state of California really learned since this has been implemented?
So this was a proposition at the time that it passed, which goes back to 2000. It still has legal challenges, but the most significant one was the Supreme Court case that said this should stand. It was voted on by the citizens of California. At the time that it passed by the largest margin of any ballot initiative in its history. I think there's been a couple since then that passed by more. 63% of our voters voted. We were very clear. We had to do analysis that became part of the voter education. Very clear, working with the economists that took a look at this, that it would raise the price of these products in the state of California. And the subsequent legislation that made it very clear that this would apply to anything sold in this state was also no one's being forced to make any changes unless they want to sell into this market. And a lot of people stood in line to be certified to sell into this market because there was a premium for it. So I would say at the end of the day, we're not forcing anyone that doesn't see the economic opportunity to do anything.
Yeah,
and I think that's yet to be settled, and I recognize that.
Yeah, I think even before Prop 12 went into effect, there were predictions of major disruptions to pork supplies and consumer prices, which, I mean, you mentioned kind of some of that process, but how do you assess those concerns today? I mean, are you still seeing supply chain disruptions, and you know, what have you learned since the implementation went into effect?
We have not seen supply chain disruptions at all. Much is predicted by the economists who worked on this. They predicted that large processors would have dedicated lines, just as they do for an organic product has to go through a dedicated line. So they would be able to stream product into the state of California. Where I do have concerns still is what it means to the price of pork, which is a very, very affordable protein for many populations in our state. Some of our smaller markets, the smaller availability in certain communities can have a detrimental effect. But the vote of the people spoke, and our job here is to help everyone that chooses to become compliant. Obviously, all of our pork producers in this state, which we are not a big pork producer, we're a big pork importer, is to ensure that we have integrity in the system. And that means really working hard to make sure people know what the rules are and how to be compliant, and that we're here to answer their questions to help make it work for them.
And you've been one of the state's longest serving agriculture secretaries. And
yeah, I've got the age to prove it.
Well, you are well known everywhere, and you'll be retiring at the end of this year. And so, you know, curious, what's one or a few of, you know, the policy innovations or things that you've championed in your role that you're most proud of during your tenure in this role?
So for me, being able to connect climate smart agriculture to market, which is what Farm to School has been doing for us. First of all, I have a passion for feeding people well and to really start at the youngest age possible to set a lifelong healthy habit of eating and nourishing your body and your mind. And I feel very fortunate to have partnered with Jennifer Siebel Newsom on this initiative, and the governor is so enthusiastic about this as a way of really helping more local procurement happen through our institutions, where our schools are the biggest restaurant on a daily basis, but that it's also pulling through product from small scale local farmers, and it continues to grow, and they're using climate smart ag practices. And I'm so proud of the work that we've done in climate smart ag. In addition to just the daily routines of what we do on food safety, tremendous progress. I mean, that's a big undertaking, 20,000 farms that are covered by the produce rule of the FSMA. And then all the new modernized ways of which we operate our detection and eradication programs when it's necessary, a lot of new sterile insect technologies and disruptors into the pest issues has been very exciting to me. And then the investments we've made in our two animal labs that'll be newer. The newest one will be coming online later this year. So it's been great to just be a part of a dynamic sector like agriculture in California, to be able to take what we've learned and share it with colleagues across the nation, and to be able to just drive around the state and be in awe of all the people that work in California agriculture. I am the luckiest person you will ever meet, and I am grateful every day for this opportunity.
We'll be back with more from California right after the break.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
Welcome back. Emily Rooney serves as president of the Ag Council of California. I asked her about the plastic and packaging regulations in the state that her members are concerned about.
We are one of several states that recently passed a regulation to make 100% of single-use plastics 100% compostable or recyclable by 2032. And so for us, that's different types of food packaging, and we have concerns around food safety and food quality and that sort of thing. And so and it's not going to come cheap. And right now there's not a lot of alternatives for plastic packaging. And so right now that's really top of mind for a lot of our members that sell into the retail space. Additionally, our energy costs and our insurance costs have all been high. Those two issues don't seem to have any easy solutions overnight, but those are some of the top issues we're worried about right now.
Yeah, when we talk about that packaging, that's a here in California thing right now.
Yeah.
But it's another thing, like we see a lot of things in California that trickle through the ag supply chain, the ag industry as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, broadly, what changes will need to be made in the food sector across ag industries? I mean, what could this really mean on a national level and here in California?
Right, so it's important to note that California was not the first state to adopt this regulation. Oregon actually was, and then there's a similar one in Colorado and about, I'd say, four or five other states. And so right now we're seeing a patchwork of similar regulations around the country, which is not good for anybody who sells throughout the United States. So we will need at the federal level some sort of harmonization effort. So that's probably the first thing. And then in terms of alternatives, we're going to need to do some R&D into alternatives for plastic packaging. On the nursery space, we've got almond byproducts that can make a really nice nursery container. However, it's very expensive, right? And so, but there's just not a lot of alternatives out there that will protect for food safety and human health purposes right now. And we've got a short time frame to get this accomplished.
Yeah, and you mentioned those high energy costs, high insurance costs, but let's turn the energy portion of that first. I mean, we're seeing that across the country, but how is it affecting, especially your members here in California?
Yeah, so for us, our electricity costs are pretty significant. It's a growing part of our cost share in the supply chain. Interestingly, the state has historically been pushing vehicles into zero emission vehicles, and right now that all means electric as well. And so it puts additional pressure on price, but also our infrastructure as well. And so recently, the Air Board has pulled back some of that zero emission vehicle mandates. But I don't think long term that that's going to go away for us. In fact, the governor just announced some incentive dollars to get folks back into the electric vehicle situation. But it does put a lot of added pressure on us. And then the way it impacts other states is when, I hate to say it, but when we start to see our, you know, we don't see rolling blackouts or rolling brownouts like we used to. And that's because California goes on the spot market nationally and consumes a lot of energy from the Western United States, which I'm sure makes a lot of other states frustrated because that'll drive up energy prices. But we have that kind of buying power to take care of the residents here. And so that usually happens when things get hot in California. So August, September, July, August, September, we have the ability to bring energy here when we need it.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after this.
I've worked at Coca-Cola for 21 years.
We're delivering Dr. Pepper from our brand new facility in Dallas, Texas.
We're really proud to still make Pepsi products in America.
You don't need a college degree to work here, but I put four kids through college by working here.
This is a great place to work with great people and great American brands.
Grocery stores, convenience stores, restaurants, they all depend on us.
We deliver great paying jobs.
We deliver beverages people love.
We deliver for our community.
America never stops. thanks to the financial support of Farm Credit, neither do the farmers and ranchers who call her home. Since the beginning, we've been helping rural America show the world what hard work can achieve. But the job is far from over. And as rural America grows further, we'll be there.
Welcome back. Chris Sanabini is president and CEO of Ag Association Management Services, Inc. I asked him about the biggest issues currently facing California agriculture.
Probably number one is regulatory pressures. And we continue to see one regulation on top of another. And like I mentioned earlier, we call it like a game of regulatory Jenga, where there's never ending pieces of the puzzle. And so the Jenga game just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And it's really harder to navigate for the ag community.
You've been in the space for a number of years. You've seen it change. You've seen it evolve. You know, how do the growers really and companies adapt to these shifting, changing pressures here?
You know, growers are, you know, as I mentioned earlier, growers are resilient and they continue to be innovative. And when I look at the labor space, which has been a big issue, you know, we've been trying to get comprehensive ag immigration reform probably for 30 years, as long as I've been doing this. And a lot of times growers just continue to adopt. And when I look at my pear growers, we used to go in and harvest pears 3-4 times. Now they go in and harvest once for the fresh market, and then they go in and strip the trees for the processing market. So they figure out how to deal with the issue, but really the issue still exists.
When we talk about, you know, those pear growers, we talk about this broader trade conversation, how California fits into producing that global food supply chain. You know, that's shifted dramatically as well. I mean, how do you see imports really affecting all of ag sectors?
Well, first of all, you know, California is probably one of the best places to produce fruits and vegetables and nuts and pretty much everything else. And we have a very high cost of production, but we also produce some of the best and safest food in the world. And when we're competing against low cost imports, it really makes it very challenging. And I understand where the retail trade is, you know, they're trying to achieve maximum ROI. But when imports come in, you know, at, you know, 25-30% below our cost, on top of our seasons, it makes it really difficult for us to compete. You know, for example, Argentina this year shipped more pears into the U.S. than we actually produced in California.
And I think this is kind of an interesting conversation at a point when the administration is really pushing for USA-produced food supply chain. And look at fruits and vegetables. That's one of the highest import categories that the U.S. has. So what kind of policy reforms do we need, whether it's at a state or federal level, to begin to correct that?
You know, I think it really comes down at the federal level. We just need a fair trade situation where they're in the citrus industry or lemon production or pear production, we need some kind of restrictions on how much product can actually come into the U.S. from other countries.
You talked a lot about the challenges facing California agriculture and agriculture in general, but you know, what makes you optimistic about this sector as you're moving in the future? What maybe, you know, opportunities or innovations really excite you about the future?
Well, there is still a lot of opportunity, and every time there is a challenge, there is another opportunity that does come forward. And, you know, growers are resilient and innovative, and there's a lot of new technology out there. You know, a grower can now manage his irrigation from his phone, and they can use probes to determine how much moisture is in the soil rather than just turning on the sprinklers or running the furrows. So if we look into the future, you know, the modern technology, the next generation of growers, they're really adapting to this. And so we see some really positive things out there.
We'll be back with more newsmakers right after the break.
For 35 years, soybean farmers have invested together to build demand for U.S. soy at home and around the world. Through the Soy Checkoff, farmers turn every dollar into stronger markets for U.S. soybeans, driving innovation and partnerships across feed, food, fuel, sustainable production, and beyond, led by farmers and built to last. U.S. Soy, 35 years of delivering value back to the farm and investing in the future of agriculture.
I was kind of known as the sheep guy around here. The fire went from north to south and it blew that way and it went straight down the house. lost all of our sheep literally a week before we were to start lambing. And I was really in a bad place. I happened to notice this farm state of mind piece of paper. And I picked up my cell phone and I made a phone call, and that was the best phone call in my life. I'm glad that I'm still here. So don't do something permanent over a temporary situation.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Congress is in session next week, and we'll be back in Washington for the next edition of the show. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.